Blog Talk Radio.
Again, this episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire. Understand the true impact of your workforce investments by visualizing talent trends and the business events that influence them. Now, with predictive analytics, Acquire Insight is more valuable than ever. Find out more at acquire.com/insight. That's Insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, acquire.com/insight. This is Paul Hebert, your guest host today, and that was a cold read, so I'm feeling pretty good about it. But anyway, we're probably going to be taking a little bit of a turn here because as far as I can tell from my dashboard, I don't have a guest. So this is going to take a very different direction, I think. Well, wait, Derek is hitting me up on the back channel here. Let me see if I can get him the information he needs to call in. And in the meantime, I'll just kind of ramble on here and try to give him the PIN. But he doesn't need a PIN. He just needs to just dial in, and I'll open up the phone. Pardon me for a minute. Anyway, today's topic is going to be about culture. Company culture. Now, I know there's a lot of you out there that may think culture is kind of a soft thing, but Bose & Company, if you're above the Mason-Dixon line, recently released a report that discusses why culture is the proven way to drive business results and profit growth. Now, in the HR world, we frequently talk about recruiting the top talent in the industry and then retaining them. But are we collectively missing the boat when it comes to culture management? Is culture management the key differentiator for companies in today's environment? Is the component of the companies that will either lead them to success or doom them to failure? I mean, we talk about Zappos all the time and how they created this infectious culture that permeates every part of who they are and what they do. But are HR leaders doing enough to proactively manage culture? So if I can see if this is Derek here, hold on just one second. Is this Derek?
No, this is Joanna.
Oh, sorry. I'll try another line. So anyway, hopefully Derek will be joining us here shortly. Derek, if you're on the line, just dial in. The call-in number is 1-646-378-1086, and just press 1 on your phone, and that'll let me know that you want to be on the phone, and I'll open up the line for you. But until Derek does that, I know he's trying to get in. So as soon as he calls in and lets us know that he's live and going to join us, we'll talk to him a little bit about managing culture. But his introduction, normally I would do this with him on the line, is Derek Irvine. He's the VP of Client Strategy and Consulting at the Employee Recognition Leader Global Force and co-author of the book Winning with a Culture of Recognition. You've probably seen his blog, Recognize This. He's blogs pretty regularly, and I think I see him there. He's still having some problems logging in, but I know he's out there. So if we just want to hold on 1 second, I will get him in. and try to just try to get him in here. I apologize. I don't normally stumble this badly up front, but it's a little tough to try to manage the Twitter back channel, my keyboard, and the phone lines here. But if Derek, if you're listening, just dial into the regular number 646-378-1086. And it'll show up on my screen, and then I can open you up for the discussion. In the meantime, I'm going to try to get somebody else on here to kind of give me a break. And hold on just one second. I think we have somebody over in the UK, so we'll get the first European accent out there before Derek gets on the line. 404, Bill, is that you?
Hi, Paul. Good to speak to you.
Yep. How are you doing? And sorry about me having a little difficulty up here.
Yeah, no problem with that. You want to be talking company culture. I just want to ask you a question, really, because when I listen to a lot of the shows on culture, where culture is being discussed, I think we always talk about a utopian world of what we want culture to be rather than what culture actually is in organizations. How do you think organizations should be using culture, the real culture, from a recruiting standpoint?
Well, I think from your perspective, from a recruiting standpoint, culture is kind of a way to get people to self-select. So, if you've got a culture like Zappos has, where it's a little bit wacky, a little bit different, obviously people that are going to gravitate towards that kind of culture are going to apply there. So it kind of limits your pool, which is a great thing, actually, if you think about it, because you know you're going to get people coming in the door that already kind of know what's happening at that organization, and there isn't going to be a big surprise for them. I think, as you would know from a recruiting standpoint, you could have the greatest candidate in the world, but if they're not a cultural, quote-unquote, fit for that organization, maybe it's an autocratic organization and this person just doesn't handle being told what to do that way.
Yeah, that's really the biggest mistake I see, Paul, in terms of recruiting, is that when you're hiring, there's a lot of people who really get seduced by the skills and experience on a resume and don't spend enough time getting to know whether that person is actually going to fit that culture.
Right.
And it's a fail. It's probably the biggest area, and I don't really understand why organizations on the whole don't prioritize the culture interview over the skills interview and actually select on culture first.
I know there's some people out there that disagree with that concept of hiring on culture. They think that you know, it's too soft a skill and all of that. But I think in general terms, culture is probably the first thing that you need, not the last thing.
Yeah, it's also the biggest reason for failure and the biggest reason for rejection. Most people wait until they've got to the end of 3, 4, 5 interview process before you start thinking about whether this person is actually going to fit in the organisation, if you even consider it at all.
Right.
I just think culture is such a big issue that we ought to be really thinking about what culture really is rather than perhaps what we want it to be.
Well, and I think that's even a deeper conversation for that could probably be another whole show, the difference between what people think their culture is and what it actually is, especially as you go further and further up the ladder in an organization. You know, you get smaller and smaller populations of people that are more similar to each other as opposed to similar to the people doing the work every day.
That's definitely something that I see a lot from a recruiting standpoint. And when we look at failure or turnover or people being unhappy, and it normally really comes back to that culture question. I mean, how would you really? I know you work with some businesses on this, so how would you realistically identify, if you did a litmus test, what the culture of an organization actually is?
Well, I mean, there's a million different surveys out there that'll help you kind of codify what's going on in the organization. I think culture always comes back to shared values, what people think are important. I think the biggest thing in my mind when I talk to clients, and I think I have Derek on the phone right now, and I'm going to just, Derek, just double check. Are you out there?
Indeed, Paul. Apologies for the...
Hey, I apologize.
I apologize too.
But, Bill, to just quickly answer your question, from my perspective, it's the stories people tell. What do they talk about at the lunchroom, at the bars? The stories they talk about should be indicative of the culture you have. I know I was working at a company years ago. All the stories were about people staying late, working hard, pulling all-nighters. That was the culture, was we worked hard, but we partied pretty hard, too, back then. So that you can tell the culture just from those stories. So let me get back to Derek real quick and try to get this boat back on track here so we don't run into an island and I end up getting arrested in Italy. But, Derek, I gave a quick overview of the fact that you're the Vice President of Client Strategy and Consulting at Global Force. You've written a book, Winning a Culture, Winning with a Culture of Recognition. And you've got your blog, Recognize This. I have here from Steve's wonderful show notes that you do consultative workshops and strategy meetings with companies such as Avnet, P&G, Dow Chemical, Intel, global powerhouses. And, you know, this whole idea of culture management, I think we've all talked and heard about culture, but I thought it was kind of interesting when I got the notes here that what the direction that you guys are talking about is culture management, managing that actual culture. And I think as we get into the rest of the show, I think that's going to be the interesting part that we're going to want to talk about is that management process. But before we get real deep into that, how about giving us a few, elevator speech with 50 floors maybe that, how did you get into what you're doing today? Was that intentional? Was it a happy accident? Was it an unhappy accident? How did you get to be an author, a blogger, all about the strategic recognition and the things that you do at Global Force?
Sure. Well, Global Force is basically in the employee recognition business, as you know, Paul. But really from the founding of Global Force, which is about 12 years ago now at this stage that I've been involved in Global Force and there since the beginning, we really felt that employee recognition could do much more for an organization than just be the high fives, the bravos. It could contribute much more significantly in an organization. And what we found that it could contribute to is to help organizations to truly manage their cultures, to proactively seek out the types of behaviors that they want to have, to seek out the type of cultural interactions, and deploy recognition to celebrate when employees do that. So we found this approach to be a very strong need in organizations, and we developed a methodology behind it that really succeeded. So working with some of the best, most forward-thinking organizations in the world, we developed a methodology that we call our strategic recognition approach, and we ended up writing a book about it. So it's something that I would say has really only happened in the last 10 to 12 years and working with our clients.
So now when we're talking about managing culture, what is your definition of culture? Because obviously we have to start with a definition of something if we're going to be able to start to analyze it, pick it apart, manage it. So what is your definition?
I think for me, the culture is the collection of all of those aggregate of tens of thousands of interactions that are happening in your organization every day. So the way people are behaving, the way people are feeling, the way people are thinking in the organization, and what they're believing in the organization. You know, are they believing in your organization with pride? Are they believing in the products? Are they believing in your processes? The way they respect each other, the way they collaborate together. It's the thousands and thousands of daily interactions that happen on those bases. They determine an organization's culture. Now, Herb Kelleher, we quote him in our book. Herb Kelleher, he's the co-founder of Southwest Airlines, an organization that has a very distinct culture.
Mm-hmm.
He describes it in a very nice catchphrase, which is that it's what people are doing when no one is looking. So it's the pattern that just is automatically going to be there without the organization having to, say this is exactly what you need to be doing. It's what people are doing when nobody is looking.
So now how does that relate to potentially the mission statement, value statements that companies have? Is the culture what they say it is, or like you're saying, is it more about the individual interactions? And is there a problem if those two things don't mesh up?
Well, absolutely there's a problem. The two need to be fundamentally matched up or strategy cannot be achieved. You know, but every organization, it has a culture. You know, no organization is out of culture. I think we all know that. You know, but whether it's the culture that leadership actually wants or whether it's a culture that has happened by accident is another question. And I suspect in many organizations, you know, the culture has happened to some extent by accident. It's not necessarily something that the business has set out deliberately to achieve. They've ended up with this culture. But businesses are just like societies, in my view. You know, every society has a culture. If we take, you know, Irish society or American society or Canadian society, they all have different cultures. There are a series of thousands and thousands of interactions and, you know, political viewpoints and ways of doing things that have evolved over many hundreds of years that have led to a culture in those particular countries. Businesses are no exception to that. Businesses are also societies. They're made up of groups of people that are interacting, doing business, thinking and believing different things about their customers, about their products, about the way that they succeed. So each business obviously develops a culture. Now, the big question that we pose to our clients is, do you know what your culture is, and are you deliberately and proactively managing your culture? That, well, I think, is the big question we put to our clients.
You say that, you know, are you deliberately managing your culture, but are clients coming to you saying, we want a culture like Zappos, everybody drink? You know what I mean? you know, Zappos gets so much, you know, press, and so did Netflix, and, you know, a few other organizations get the, you know, a lot of press about their culture. And I know I've had people on the blog and other things say, we want a culture like Zappos. How do you answer that question?
Sure. Well, there's not too many people want to be exactly like Zappos. I think, you know, Zappos clearly have a very distinct culture that they've developed to suit their marketplace. It's given them a competitive advantage. But certainly what we encounter is organizations coming to us saying, you know, innovation, for example, is something that's really important in our future strategy. We have found that we've maybe been lagging in the marketplace. We have a good culture today, but our innovation is not strong enough. How do we imbue more innovation in the organization? That's an issue for us. So, you know, we would work with senior leadership, work with people who drive change in an organization to develop a change management strategy to bring about more innovation. Now, bringing about more innovation is clearly simpler said than done. There has to be a strategy in terms of investment, and, you know, there's all sorts of people working on what products and what markets are appropriate to be in. But where we assist is, what sort of culture are you going to be putting in place to support that innovation drive? Because if the people that you have working in your innovation teams aren't rewarding and celebrating the values that drive innovation, your strategy is going to fail. Your strategy is going to be eaten for lunch if the two are not in alignment. So that's really where we particularly work with clients, is to say, it's not just about the investment of dollars behind innovation. It's not just about, you know, the go-to-market strategy being right. It's about ensuring that you have the soft elements and the value elements reinforcing that, and that people know that this is now important in the organization. We're going to celebrate, we're going to call out when people live this new innovative value.
So,
and that's where we, yeah, go ahead, Paul.
No, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but, you know, you spark things in my head when you start talking about this, because now we're talking about, you know, hundreds of people, sometimes thousands of people doing things, and that's what your culture is. So when you talk about managing culture as an imperative for businesses, how do you manage, you know, say, you know, a global organization with multiple countries, and each of those countries have cultural differences just at the human level, let alone at the business level, and now
sure.
You've got all their different activities, and you want to be able to manage that culture. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, for most organizations, their culture tends to equate to their values. And senior executives spend a lot of time and energy trying to determine what their values ought to be. And rightly so, because they understand the potential importance of those. But unfortunately for many organizations, the values end up being, you know, put on a poster, or they become a slogan in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about as far as it goes. So we say, okay, we've now got our values. That's our culture. That's where we'd like to be. Let's put it behind the reception area in a big frame. So where we come in and where we differ, I suppose, to that, you know, pretty straightforward approach, is to say that you do need to proactively manage it on a day-to-day basis. And that one of the tools that all organizations, all cultures across the world have available to them is the power of positive reinforcement. And we all know that positive reinforcement works much, much better than negative reinforcement. So what we ask the clients that we're working with to do is to take, you know, all of the goodwill and all of the celebration and all of the feedback interactions that are naturally happening in your organization every day. There's thousands of these interactions happening every day. Is there a way that we can capture them, that we can see them, that we can channel them to be in more similar vocabulary? And that's where a strategic employee recognition program comes in place, where we encourage employees when they talk about living out these values to record it in a single place so we can capture it, we can see it, we can report back to management how are we doing with living and celebrating these values.
So what if, though, that what they're doing every day and the values that were established don't jive up? Can you actually move a culture in a direction this way?
Well, I think if they don't jive up, it creates a great conversation that leadership is going to be very interested in, isn't it? That, you know, it says, well, here's strategically where we would want to go, but our cultural alignment is not assisting us to take us that direction. So, you know, that opens up a whole other series of conversations, good conversations, because it gives management an early warning signal that your strategy is not going to work. Because if innovation is one of your big new strategic drives and you look at a dashboard, as we would provide our clients, to see, well, are your employees recognizing and celebrating each other for innovation? You know, looking at different departments, different groups, is there this day-to-day interaction happening celebrating innovation? And if you discover that it's not, then, you know, you clearly got a problem. So you get an opportunity to intervene. And you can talk to the leaders that one would think should be responsible for bringing out more of this value. You can make people aware of it. And very often by simply making people aware of it, it starts to change their behavior. It starts to make them pay more attention to the need for that value.
Now, can you have a situation where, you know, I can see a lot of companies, and I've been at a lot of companies, where they'll have, you know, the 15 or 20 tenets of who we are, our mission, values, that kind of thing. But, you know, it can be a list as, you know, as long as, 50 ways to leave your lover kind of thing. Is there too many values that you can put into to manage? Or do you need to get it down to some core 3, 5, 10, whatever the number might be? Do you see, from your experience, clients and companies having too many values to manage, or is there a sweet spot?
There's definitely power in simplicity. Whether the exact number is 6 or 10, I wouldn't argue the toss on that poll. I think simplicity, but also authenticity, is the other factor that's key. They have to be values that the employees themselves really do play back, that, you know, we agree that this should be our uniting set of values. We agree this is part of our history, you know, that this is where we've come together, and we agree this is where we can go in terms of the future. So authenticity, I believe, is really important. Zappos is a great example of that. Mm. Their culture book is a book that's been developed by the employees, and it gets refined and it gets developed every year. So without that authenticity, you're absolutely going to hit an enormous brick wall, because employees will just say, well, that's not really us.
Mm-hmm.
So very important to involve employees in the strategy development, but also the culture of strategy delivery, that they feel like they're a part of it and they can sign up to it.
You know, there's some discussion on the back channel of whether or not culture is a top-down or a bottom-up, or is it organic, or does your strategy drive culture, or does culture drive strategy? In your opinion, from your experience, is culture a better thing to drive from the bottom up? And in other words, the executive branch of the organization, should they take, kind of set a direction, like say we're going to go west, and then just kind of sit back and let things get monitored and try to, influence and nudge things through the recognition and through the things that you reward within the organization? Is it better to go from the bottom up, or is it a top, more of a top-down thing?
Well, I think it's leaders need to lead. So I for sure believe that there needs to be a direction set, which is appropriate for the success of that company. But then leaders need to make sure that the bottom is behind them. You know, that they're on board. Because as I mentioned earlier, I think, you know, culture can absolutely eat strategy for lunch. If the executives are somehow up in their ivory tower saying we're all going to head west, and they haven't brought their collective employees with them, you know, it's just not going to work. So I do believe that there needs to be leadership, there needs to be direction, it needs to start at the top, but then it's got to filter all the way down as a real live activity.
So I mean, so are you thinking that the real lever is in the rank and file as opposed to the executive level?
One of the things that we do in particular, as I know you know already, Paul, but in rolling out our culture management approach and putting in place employee recognition programs to support that, we're really big believers in a mass mobilization of the employees and spotting when the culture is being lived. So, you know, leaders need to set the direction and say this is where we want to go, but it's not going to be down to us as leaders to spot when people are living these values. We really want to have a democratization and a sort of a mass mobilization of all of the employees so that it's up to you when you see these values being lived. We want you to call it out. We want you to celebrate through peer-to-peer recognition is the way that we do that. And as a result, you give ownership, I suppose, to the delivery of the strategy to the employees.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, you know, to the specific point, it's not that you've gone out to the employees and asked the employees to, you know, to give the direction that the company should be going in the first instance. I believe that is down to leadership to set that to begin with.
Okay. Just to level set real quick, we're about halfway through now. If you wanted to call in, the call-in number is 646-378-1086. We're talking with Derek Irvine from Global Force, Senior Vice President or Vice President of Strategy. And we're talking about culture and how to maybe manage that. I guess, you know, this is the title of the show, Derek, is HR Happy Hour. So from an HR perspective, and just to be kind of funny, I'm going to try to get you to say HR as much as you can because I remember you did a presentation years ago and somebody tweeted out that you said AHR, you know, HR versus HR. So I'm going to try to get you to say as much as you can. But anyway, from an HR perspective, where is HR's role in all of this? And what can the HR professional do if we're talking about culture being, you know, the sum total of behaviors and activities within an organization? Where does HR fit into this? How can the people that typically call in here take some of this information and work with it?
Sure. Well, I think this is a huge opportunity for HR. did I get it in there?
Yeah, you're going to be self-conscious now for the rest of the show.
I know. I'm not going to be sure which way I'm doing it right or not. But I think it's a huge opportunity for HR. If you think about HCM, that classic acronym, you know, human capital management, I don't like to use human capital management. I prefer to call that human culture management, actually. Because if you think about human capital management, suggests that what we're managing is a logical resource. You know, it's capital, that it's logical, it behaves in a sort of a very understandable, fixed way, you know, and we're going to make investments in relation to it. And anybody who's worked in HR obviously knows that that's not the case. I mean, it's a wonderful concept, of course, you know, the ROI behind the deployment of your people and all that sort of stuff. But capital... people are not capital. They don't behave rationally. So I much rather human culture management. Now, if HR could grasp human culture management, they have a tremendous ROI opportunity to bring to the organization. This has got real business legs to it, what I'm talking about. And I'm not the only one to say that. Booz and Company, the management consultancy firm, it just released a fantastic piece of research that maybe your listeners could check out, or if there's a link or something. But it's in their winter release, winter research, and they look specifically at companies seeking to imbue more innovation in their organizations. You know, so companies that distinctly say we want to be innovative, innovation is the strategy, we want to deliver on strategy. And they looked at those organizations from a cultural point of view and said, well, okay, so there's a bunch of organizations that are really good at saying, you know, we're investing in innovation, but they compare that against their ability to have an innovative culture at the same time. And what they found was that the companies that succeeded in both having an innovative culture and investing in innovation strategy had a 17% higher profit growth rate, a 30% higher enterprise value than companies that had a misalignment. So companies that said, well, we have the strategy for innovation, but you know what? We don't think we're culturally so good. It's not one of the things that if you ask people, you know, on the shop floor, you go into the restaurant, innovation wouldn't be our strong point. We're not so well aligned. So there's a real hard statistic that shows that if you can get your culture and your strategy to absolutely working together, 30% higher enterprise value, 17% higher profit growth. So I think there's a huge opportunity for HR.
So how would they then impact that? What is it that HR can do to help drive and manage the culture, as you're saying?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things, as I heard at the outset of the conversation, you know, everybody can talk about culture. Everybody can talk, can tell the stories, you know, and there's great stories in every organization that indeed become the kind of the history of the company, and stories go on, and they get passed from departments over generations. The difficulty with all of that is that it comes across a bit soft. You know, it's kind of the soft, nice-to-have stuff. How do you turn those stories, how do you turn that positivity into a much harder management practice, something akin to Six Sigma? And that's what really we think about when we think strategic employee recognition, because employee recognition is kind of suffered from the same over the decades. It's soft, it's nice to have, there's the nice stories celebrating things between people. But what we've done is we've taken an approach where we said, no, it can be much harder than that. It can truly be strategic. So I think what HR can do is they can say they would like to put in place this new management practice that we've developed, strategic recognition, to collect together all of these stories, collect together all of this, these goodwill interactions, record them, analyze them, capture them, try to encourage and nudge the organization to be pointing all of those celebrations at the strategic statements, at the strategic vocabulary of the company. So that when people, you know, decide to call each other out for things that they've done, it's not just attaboy, bravo, but it's I'm calling it out specifically because of how you behaved in relation to delivering our strategy, in relation to the things that you've done to help us strategically move forward. That, to me, it really is a huge opportunity for HR. It's something that, you know, some of your listeners might be saying, gee, well, has anybody actually done that? And I can give you countless examples of clients where we've done that. And within 6 to 12 months, we've seen very dramatic improvements in their culture scores, very dramatic improvements in their employee engagement scores. This is something that works. And we're so incredibly excited about it. That's exactly why we decided to go and write the book all about it.
Right. Well, I mean, engagements and alignment and all that in the last, you know, 5-6 years has really taken on almost a life of its own. And, you know, you can't, apologies to Lori Ruderman, you can't swing a cat without hitting somebody that wants to talk about engagement. And I think, you know,
sure,
we've got an environment out there that requires it anymore. You know, we've seen companies move away from being, you know, product focused to being services and intellectually focused. So it's more important than ever to have those people aligned. One of the questions I always run into, and I'd love to hear your point of view on this, is that, you know, from an HR perspective, we can go out and get a system to do this and to manage it. And I know your company provides that kind of stuff. How important, though, is it to really focus in on that kind of that mid-tier management level? In my mind, they are critical for the translation of the strategy and vision from above to the actual behaviors below. Is that something you focus on at all within what you're working on? Is that management tier that kind of connects those two levels?
Absolutely. And, you know, in fact, just back to the point that I made a moment ago about moving recognition and moving culture management from the soft nice-to-have into a hard management approach. So, you know, the group you mentioned is key in that. But also the type of management you put in place around this is key. Because if you go out into your organization and say, you know, we want to manage culture, we want to have more celebration and recognition when we're achieving our strategy, everybody will agree with you. Everybody will nod their heads and they say, yeah, gee, we couldn't possibly disagree with that. That's really great. But the problem with that is that they then won't actually go do it. because it's something that's it's freely available. I can tap into this at any moment in time. I can go celebrate. I can go thank people. I can go look at whether we're living our values in marketing or whether we're living in values in production. I can go do that anytime I like. And therefore, they won't. They'll put it on the to-do list and it will slip down and down the to-do list. So in our approach, taking this kind of soft and turning it into something like Six Sigma, we're very strong believers in adopting some of the things that you've learned from, you know, Six Sigma in terms of your approach to this. So executive sponsorship would be something we are strong advocates. This has got to be a voice from the top. You mentioned the mid-tier. You know, there's got to be training. There's got to be communications to these different people. They will help roll things out. But one of the fundamental and biggest components for us is measurement. In today's organization, it's a reality that putting in place a metric, putting in place measurement for things, tends to signal importance to people. So that's why we're big believers in saying, you know, culture and values, they all seem like soft things, nice things, we all agree with them, but people don't take them seriously enough unless you distinctly put a metric and a measurement beside them. That's when an organization tends to sit up and take notice. So measurement is one of, in fact, our biggest tactics and deployments that we encourage clients to really embrace, Paul.
So do companies ever try to game the metric? Now that, you know, anytime you put a number up on a board or any kind of measurement, there's going to be people that are going to try to scam the system. And do you find in the installations that you guys do or the engagements that you do, is that a problem? Do people actually, you know, are you measuring? My bigger question is, what are you measuring then?
Sure.
If you're saying, let's put a metric on it.
Yeah.
What is that metric?
Indeed. So it's back to, I suppose, the definition that we started at the front. You know, we said, what is culture? Culture is the aggregate of thousands of interactions every day where people are recording, you know, feelings, beliefs about things, celebrating what the company is doing. So we want, in as far as possible, obviously we can't capture, you know, all conversations. I mean, that would be ludicrous.
Right.
But what we can capture is we can capture some very specific things in there. When folks want to give feedback in the organization, when folks want to call out and celebrate particular activities, we can absolutely ensure that we capture those. In fact, we can encourage people to, you know, to be a little bit more formal about those things. So we capture all of those elements. And because all of those celebrations and interactions and feedbacks are now directly linked to the company's values, directly linked to the company's strategy, we can see the level of interactions in a day-to-day dashboard that shows the level of interactions and feedback and celebration that's happening for innovation, or the level of feedback and celebration that's happening for collaboration. And we start to see visually how the organization is behaving on these things. And that quite simply is a insight that any organization, I think, would find impossible to get in any other way. You know, there is nothing else that is trying to measure that mood, that feedback, other than by putting in place a strategically aligned recognition program like I'm describing. So in our experience, in the deployments that we have with our clients, what we find is quite the opposite to what you said, Paul, people trying to game this. What we find is this mass mobilization of employees and managers, you know, being very excited to suddenly have a way to be able to celebrate things and to be able to see and record and know, I suppose, over a period of time, you know, how they have been achieving their values and their strategy. So we see an enormous, genuine outbursting of feedback and recognition occurring. It's far from gaming it. It really brings forward genuineness.
What about, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about, you know, capturing the, you know, the those moments within the organization, the behaviors, the things that people are doing. What about social media? How does that play into all of this? Is to me, you know, social media is kind of the, you know, it's the water cooler conversation. So that kind of gives you the undercurrent or the subtext for the organization. How does social media play into this idea of managing culture?
Sure. Well, social media is a wonderful new technology to enable all of this, because obviously, if you take the best of the Facebook, you know, the news feeds and the way people can interconnect with each other and follow each other, you take that into the corporate world, which is what we've done with social recognition, which we just launched last year. It allows those interactions to be occurring on a much more spontaneous, continuous, sort of frictionless basis, where people are encouraged to add their voice of celebration. There's a continuous, as I said, news feed within the organization of the different things that we're achieving. So it's huge in terms of driving that conversation, bringing visibility to those interactions, and bringing measurement to the interactions, because obviously, given everything I've been saying, overlaid on our social recognition technologies would not only be the interactions, but we're able to provide management with some pretty sophisticated tools to be able to see those interactions real time, you know, to be able to see who's connected to who, who's celebrating what, in what sort of volume, and that gives management some pretty important insights into their organization.
So where do you see this all heading, Derek? I mean, we've talked a lot about the ability to capture what's going on, and I think, you know, that in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, when I think in terms of the old way that recognition used to be done at companies, it was, we're going to run a recognition program, people recognize people for whatever they want, it gets into the system, and somebody gets a plaque or somebody gets a crystal bowl that ends up, you know, holding candy at Christmas or whatever. And now you've basically started with, this is what we're going to recognize, and backing into that as opposed to starting with the recognition program. So where do you see this going? What's the next level?
Yeah, well, I think for starters, we've put one of the next levels on the table, which is the concept of being proactively able to manage your culture, human culture management, and the opportunity that represents. As I said earlier, if you get your strategy aligned and your culture aligned, Booz is showing a 30% higher enterprise value. So I think that, for one, is already another very high level. But there's a second high level, which I think is really interesting out of the topic we were just talking about, social recognition. And I think what we're starting to see organizations doing is taking the interactions, the goodwill, et cetera, that happens between employees, and to start to build that into talent management profiles of employees. So if I'm in an organization and I'm, say, responsible for driving innovation, do my peers think I'm good at innovation? And one of the ways of having a proxy for my skills, obviously, is whether I deliver the goods, do I come up with the innovative projects at the end of the day, but how am I in the process? Am I helping others to be innovative? Do others see me as innovative? All of that gets captured through a strategic recognition program, through social recognition, where people are calling out whether this person or these teams are innovative or not. And what we're finding as a next step is integrating that data into talent management systems so that organizations can start to build deeper understandings and profiles of the talent pools that they've got. And these interactions, these cultural interactions, are becoming an important foundation of that. So I think that's a pretty exciting frontier that's really only just beginning to take off.
When you keep mentioning innovation as something that we can manage through having some sort of strategic focus on recognizing behaviors. What are the other big areas that you're seeing companies wanting to focus on? I mean, innovation, I think, has been kind of a buzzword lately, in that we focus on companies that iterate quickly and release early and all of that, and innovation. But I got to believe there's other cultural, you know, touchstones out there that companies want to get? What are you seeing as the other areas companies look for in their culture that they want to reinforce?
Well, I think for me, it really comes down to each and every company has a strategy, and therefore the item that clients are coming to us and saying they want to reinforce is their strategy. So it's actually as simple as that, Paul, where every company, you know, they have a strategy and they want to reinforce it. Semantic is a client of ours, as you know. In their instance, they came to us some 2 to 3 years ago now. And for them, clearly an innovative company, clearly a highly acquisitive company, very successful, growing very rapidly. But for them, their particular goal was that they had acquired so many different companies, they felt they had acquired many different cultures. So for them, their strategic imperative at the time they came to us was to unite those cultures, to create a one semantic culture. So it really, in my mind, varies completely, you know, according to your company, and you're going to have a strategy, and therefore the culture needs to be in alignment with that. So it's not as easy as, you know, the current buzzword is teamwork or collaboration. I think it's the buzzword is what is your strategy as a client, because that's what we want to help to reinforce.
But there has to be kind of some pretty standard ones, and I only ask this because, you know, we're talking pretty much from
sort of
an HR perspective, and I think people are kind of waiting to hear, all right, well, what should I be looking for, you know, kind of things, and what are the big buckets? I recognize that everybody has a different definition of what innovation is, and everybody might have a different definition of what collaboration is, but what are the big ones that people keep, you know, I got to believe they keep coming back to some big buckets of things that our company needs to do, and how you do them may be different. I'm just curious. I mean, the answer may be no, but, you know, I'm going
to
try.
I know. It would be nice to have a sort of a top of the pops, the top 10 keywords that, you know, like Google comes up with top 10 searched words, integrity and collaboration, teamwork, et cetera. And I know exactly where you're going, Paul. But candidly, as I said, to me, if you go down that sort of direction, it removes the authenticity of saying, well, you know, well, what are popular values to have today? Maybe we should have those. Or to a question that you said earlier, well, everybody wants to be like Zappos. What are their values? Let's try and copy them. And to me, it fundamentally misses the point. You know, the fundamental point here is that companies want to win in the marketplace. Companies want to have a competitive advantage. In order to win and have a competitive advantage, you develop a strategy to do that. And your culture needs to support that strategy. So the conversation for me starts with, what is your strategy in the marketplace? And have you got a culture that is going to support that strategy? So it's more, you know, you could ask the question, what are popular strategies today?
Well, and that's probably why innovation comes up so often, is because everybody wants to be innovative now. Nobody wants to be the absolute best at building buggy whips, even though, you know, you could potentially make a lot of money doing that if there was, you know, if you did it more effectively and efficiently than somebody else. This is all great, and I know everybody loves to talk about their success stories, but I have to believe somewhere in the history of what you've put together over the years, Derek, you've had some disasters. Not because it was your fault. I wouldn't suggest that. But where is it that companies go wrong? Can you give us an example where, you know, sometimes we learn best from other people's mistakes?
Yes.
You know, I'm always a great a cautionary tale for other people. But give me an example of somebody who's done it incorrectly. Do you have one?
I hear a lot of incorrect stories all of the time, as people are coming to us to look to do it correctly. and a lot of folks get this pretty mixed up, you know, that they think that there is an off-the-shelf approach to, you know, building an employee recognition program. Sure, an employee recognition program will help us build our culture, that there's an off-the-shelf approach. And oftentimes they think that they've ticked all the boxes when they say, well, gee, we've got a budget, you know, we spend a lot of money on communications and training, but why is it not working? I encounter companies all the time where that's the case. And even quite recently came across, you know, an organization that, you know, spent literally tens of thousands of dollars on training videos to to roll out this program on a worldwide basis. They're rolling it out on a worldwide basis, and guess what? The training was in English only, for starters. So that's a big faux pas. Secondly, they're rolling it out internationally, and a group you mentioned, middle managers, hadn't been given any briefing, didn't know what this was about, just something that comes from the top. You know, view this video. We're going to be changing our culture. We're going to start celebrating each other in a new way. So, you know, you put it in all of the international languages, clearly is key if you're going to be rolling out internationally. But also you have to put in place two of the key elements that I mentioned earlier. You have to have executive sponsorship. You have to have the middle line lined up in terms of knowing what's happening. And the third thing that I mentioned earlier as well, you need to put in place metrics and measurements. So it becomes a distinct, hard sort of measurable item with each team, each leadership group knows we're bringing out a new initiative and we're going to be measuring and monitoring your level of participation in it, your level of recognition. We're going to be measuring and monitoring the sort of values that you're living out. Putting that in place ensures a success. But the corporate world is filled with people, believe you me, for sure, who just think, you know, produce a video, push some training, and it'll work, but it doesn't. And when they wonder why, thankfully, they very often come to us.
So is it safe to say that the difference between a strategic recognition program, and I even almost hate to use the word recognition, the strategic culture management program,
yeah,
and a recognition program, I guess that's a better way to juxtapose those two, is the difference between having a program and having a tool that supports the strategy? I mean, is that just a better way to look at it?
That's one way of putting it, or maybe it's even the difference between having a program and having a culture that lasts for the long term. You know, so if you think about a recognition program being something that sometimes comes and goes, it's pink one year, it's purple the next year, that, by comparison to you, are putting in place a new culture, a culture of recognition, which is going to support your strategy in order that you as an organization can win and gain competitive advantage over your competitors. To me, I think that's the difference, a program versus a day-to-day culture.
How would what you're talking about work where culture needs to change over time? I mean, nothing is ever a constant. You know, we had a couple people say, well, you know, show me an example where somebody's changed the culture. And the biggest one that always comes to mind for me is IBM, where they went from selling hardware to selling professional services. That's a huge culture change, a huge mindset going from, you know, customer, operationally efficient to customer intimate is a huge culture change. How does a culture change over time if you're constantly reinforcing the behaviors you started the program with? Did that make sense?
If you're constantly reinforcing the behaviors that you start the program with?
Yeah, I mean, if you go in and say, okay, we've got these cultural values that we want to reinforce in our system, and we want to train people how to do that. We want them to leverage the technology so that we can track and manage that. But over time, the culture needs to change. How does that occur if I'm still reinforcing behaviors from 5 years ago?
Yeah, well, I think that's what's got to change. You know, I think you need to lay out your new roadmap in terms of this is the set of values that we want to head towards. This is the type of culture that we want to head towards. And then through the power of positive reinforcement, what you end up doing is you end up sort of telegraphing through these little interactions that become hundreds of interactions and thousands of interactions that are now focused on the new values. And particularly, as I mentioned earlier, where you invite employees through a mass mobilization for themselves to spot it, you'd be amazed at how receptive employees can be when they're given that latitude, given that invite. They themselves start to change the culture. Nothing worse than managers sitting up in an ivory tower saying, this is the new culture that we need, you know, putting it on the posters and saying, we will now all behave in this new way. I mean, that's just doomed to failure in most organizations, for sure. So I think the key element, Paul, is those thousands of interactions. How do we make those about the new culture that we want to achieve? And they certainly can't be about the old cultural values. We've got to let those slide, let those go by.
So you've got no great horror stories to tell me, huh? Because I was kind of hoping for more.
Maybe over a pint, Paul. The horror stories are just for you and me over a pint.
Yeah. Well, I hope we get that opportunity. We've got about 5 minutes left. If somebody wants to jump in, again, the number is, and Steve's going to get mad at me because I didn't say this as often as he does. The number to dial in is 1-646-378-1086. Dial in, hit the number 1. It should pop up a little window there. If not, hit me on the Twitters. I'm trying to manage that. Anybody that ever said people can multitask is full of it. Trying to pay attention to what you're saying, Derek, and still look at all this other stuff is impossible.
I know.
So I apologize to everybody on Twitter for not playing along as I usually do. What would you give as advice right now to HR for getting, you know, mobilizing their team internally to drive toward having more of a strategic application of recognition in their organization versus just let's go check the box, let's just install a system. You know, this person has a service as a software model, we'll just go and sign up and we're done. How would you suggest to HR that they socialize this concept internally at their organization?
Yes. Well, I think what's wonderful these days is that there is more and more research out there that HR can bring up along the organization to prove that this stuff works. You know, that has been a distinct problem in the past, that culture management, you know, recognition has been seen as being something soft. What we're encouraged by and what we're absolutely leading is making it a hard management practice. So I think gathering together some of that research, obviously we have a lot of it. I mentioned the likes of the Booz research just out this season. It's a real business proposition that, in my experience, senior management will listen to, that if you can show that companies that succeed in culture alignment and strategy alignment, that they're going to have a 30% higher enterprise value. That's a conversation senior executives are interested in. Or the classic that Towers Watson can illustrate, where 15% improvement in engagement delivers a 2% improvement in operating margin. There's more research out there. It's hard facts. Utilize that to build a bigger ambition for yourselves, HR, because I think you can have a bigger ambition around this space, and it can contribute very, very significantly and strategically in an organization. So it's a wonderful opportunity, in my view, for HR to grasp that.
And is that the place in the organization you think that conversation needs to start?
Well, you know, you've got to get the executive sponsorship for these things.
Sure.
To work. Sometimes HR will lead it. In our experience, sometimes the initiative can actually come out of change management, or it can actually come out of chief operating officer, mm-hmm. where they know that they have strategic things that they want to achieve, and they know that they have people issues that aren't in alignment. You know, the culture isn't helping them to get the strategy achieved. So sometimes the conversation actually can start, as I said, in other places. But if HR understand this and they go champion it, I bet they'll find that they're pushing on open doors, you know, with the people who are leading the lines of businesses and tackling cultural issues on a day-to-day basis.
Well, we've got about almost exactly 2 minutes left, and I know this kind of just shuts down and starts running the audio clip, so I want to make sure we don't do that over what we're talking about. And I'll leave it after the music plays. I'll leave the after show on, and Derek, you're more than welcome to stay and hang out. I'll open up any lines that are available then, and we'll just chat it up at the end there. It'll still be recorded. But I'm going to ask this one question. You got a minute 40, minute 50. What about gamification?
Yes.
Gamification is huge. How do you feel about that within a managing culture within an organization?
Gamification is instantly appropriate for sales incentives, and perhaps in call center environments. I'm yet to be convinced as to the power of gamification in building a culture in the way that we've been talking about, Paul. I think there are certain aspects of it that could be very, very powerful. For example, if you're thinking about training and learning, you know, gamification could be extremely useful in the training and learning aspect of it. But I would hate to see people creating sort of like Second Life environments where, you know, GM or Procter & Gamble suddenly now have their culture up in a Second Life environment. And I just think that's it takes away something that I mentioned earlier, the genuineness and the authenticity around culture. It's too important for that. Whereas it absolutely works in environments where people need short boosts of motivation, prizes, things like sales incentives and customer call centers.
Well, great. We've got about 30 seconds. Why don't you give everybody online and listening kind of, you know, where you can be found? I mean, obviously, you've spent an hour with us. We owe you that much.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Paul. Indeed, and my apologies for the late jump on.
Oh, no problem.
We'll go into how that happened later. you can get me. I blog all the time, every day. Recognize this. Blog, also, of course, globalforce.com. And I've mentioned many things on this call, everything from research like the Booze & Co. research. We have a ton of it on our website, globalforce.com. If people want to go visit, there's plenty of white papers and research and things there available to download on this topic. We'd be pleased to have a conversation with anybody who wants to take this further.
Well, we appreciate your time today, Derek. I apologize for the little bit of snafu up front. I'm hoping we're still online. We're not. there was no exit.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, I still have Bill on the line. I don't know if he wanted to talk. I'm going to open them all up. We are in the after hour, after happy hour, Derek. If you need to go, I totally understand.
Sure.
But we do have a couple. I think Bill's still on the line there, and one other person. So feel free to jump in.
Good.
I am still here, Paul. Just a great show. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really interesting conversation, and I'll be looking up your stuff.
Good. Thank you very much. Sorry, I missed your own part early on.
Yeah, not a problem.
Yeah, Bill was the one that saved my butt at the beginning by starting the conversation while we were trying to get the numbers to you.
I know. So. I kept being asked for a PIN number, but it turns out I think I had the wrong number because you know, just every time I went in, it kept saying PIN or bugger off.
Yeah, it asked you for a dial-in number, then asked you to dial one if you want to talk. I think what you were doing is you must have been dialing in on the host number rather than a guest
right.
dial-in.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking at the email that Steve sent out, and I think it had both numbers in it. So
got it. That'll be all it is. But that was a really good show. I enjoyed that.
Hey,
okay.
Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Mark Bennett.
Hey, Mark.
So yeah, I was tweeting away there on the various things. Derek really liked the things you had to say. So I'm the product strategist for Oracle's Network at Work, and we heavily use the idea of recognition. We call them kudos, where people can publicly recognize their colleagues for things that they've done. And we're migrating that to become even more contextual so that when not only is it easy to do, you can just say, hey, thanks a lot, Derek. You really helped us out on, you can also say what project it was or what you got me to think about was there's probably an easy way for us to link this to the notion of maybe a corporate value that's in the system someplace, as maybe it's embedded as a top level competency that people typically model their core values that way. And you could kind of say great example of, and then you can reference the value directly. And then the reason why I like those kinds of approaches is then it enables these conversations that are going on in what we call the system of engagement, where everything's kind of unstructured and free-form, and you don't want to get in the way of that, but you can then link it to the system of records so that, like you say, you want to bring that into your talent management. Well, you need to bring
That's
it
right.
in a way that your talent management system can actually process that data and do analysis.
Yeah.
You do great work on that, Oracle. I do some work with the EB recruiting team on their social recruiting, and that was one of the things that I looked at early on when I was getting the cultural feel, and the system works really well.
Yeah.
I think it's that public recognition. It's the same as Ripple. It's when when it's two things. It's a social media environment, so it's something the users are familiar with, and it keeps the communication fairly short and to the point, which is important. But being able to award the badges and include that once you get into performance management, not just the badges, but the public recognition is absolutely key, and the platforms let you do that.
Exactly. Yeah, we found it as a great way to smooth out the performance management process, because now the manager doesn't have to spend so much time soliciting, you know, the 360 feedback. They can just sort of, you know, scoop up all of that public recognition that the person has accumulated over their review period, and that makes great grist for the mill. Also, we recycle it by making it part of the process by which a person determines if they found the person they're looking for when they look for expertise. So if they say, you know, who out there in the company knows a lot about, you know, high temperature ceramics, or, you know, whatever it is that's, you know, you need an answer to, you find that person because of their expertise, but then you can look a little bit further and see if they have a lot of, you know, public recognition for being a great collaborator, you know, and you can kind of, you know, as a result, get sort of a sense that, yeah, that's the person I want to go to because they seem to be very accessible, very helpful, and things like that. Of course, there's a dangerous side, because that becomes possibly an accelerating cycle, because the more the person is recognized, the more they're in demand, the more they're in demand, the more they get recognized, and pretty soon they're completely, you know, swamped with requests for help.
But that fits in great for internal mobility, though, which is becoming increasingly important.
With what? I'm sorry?
Internal mobility, of being able to recognize what talent you've got in the organization, because for many years it's been so hard to do that people with skills have just been hidden and not able to move about.
Yeah, yep. That's one of the uses that we found with Smantic specifically, that we were able to create a kind of we have a technology behind the social recognition where we created kind of a scatter a diagram of, you know, the interconnectivities between people, what they're celebrating between each other, and it could become a way to find high potential individuals that might otherwise not be on your radar, because you find individuals who are being celebrated for things that, you know, there's hot spots of individuals being celebrated for particular things that you might not have known these individuals existed.
Yeah, I think it's those spontaneous celebrations as well, because it's not necessarily in a formal process where somebody's got to sit down and think about it, but colleagues are awarding those recognitions.
Exactly.
When they're used properly, they've got real value. You can pick out pretty quickly who your stars are.
Yep. So, Derek, you know, just in case we run out of time here, I would like to follow up with you to see if maybe we have the potential for some ongoing conversations on these topics.
Absolutely. I think we would definitely have some potential for ongoing conversation. So I see you on LinkedIn. Maybe I'll drop you a LinkedIn link and we can kind of take something from there.
Sounds good.
Excellent.
Well, thanks, Mark. Appreciate you paying attention and being part of it.
Yeah, thanks for hosting, Paul. You did a great job, and you did great, great recovery. And, oh, one last thing I want to say is, do not feel bad about not being able to multitask. The only reason why Steve can do it is because he's done it for so long. He doesn't have to, he does it without having to think, and that was the difference.
Well,
he also has someone to do it. Don't forget.
Yeah, there was a third party.
He
in
has
there.
A minion in the background, which I don't think he has tonight. So let's not. And I say minion by HR minion, not by you.
When I was doing my own show, I could do it, but I was in, you know, I was a little bit more tied into the topic, and I knew who I was talking to and ahead of time. And not that Derek and I don't know each other, but and it's a lot more active today than it's ever. You know, the tweet stream's pretty active nowadays, so it's just difficult.
Yeah,
but
I appreciate
that.
People listening, though, Paul, that was the thing.
Good. Well, thank you, Bill, for saving my ass at the beginning. You guys, thanks a lot. I'm going to go ahead and shut this thing down.
Right.
Derek, thanks so much. I hope you and Mark hook
Paul.
Up and everything goes well.
See you soon, Paul.
All right.
See you soon, everyone. Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.